Welcome back to Mastering You with Matt Sutton. I'm the host for another episode today for all of you personal development junkies out there. And we have another awesome mastery episode. Today we are working on mastering your emotions, which I know is something that so many people are interested in doing. And just before we get into the details of this episode, I just want to really say a massive thank you to all of you listeners out there, you know, for supporting the show. We've had a massive jump in listenership just over the last month, and I really appreciate that, you know. So if you are enjoying these episodes, if you enjoy the content, please, 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 could you head on over to the Mastering You podcast at Apple Podcast and hit us with a positive review. Maybe it's an episode that you've enjoyed, maybe you just enjoy, you know, all of the episodes, but any 5-star review would be really amazing to continue this trajectory of increasing our listenership. Anyway, on to today's episode. Yeah, so like I said, we are mastering emotions today. I'm talking to an expert in that area, so Matthew Gibson, who is a professor at the University of Birmingham. He's a director center for emotional education, and he's a researcher in the School of Social Policy. His research interests relate to emotions and professional practice, and in particular, the emotions around pride and shame. A couple of things that we go into in this episode. But one of the key questions that I asked Matthew right at the start of the episode, and that really sets the scene for the majority of it, is what does it actually mean to master your emotions? What does that look like? And how do we go about it? And we obviously go into some practical strategies as well. So I think you really enjoy this one. If you want to find out more about Matthew and his work, then you can take his emotions quiz over at the centerforemotionaleducation.com. And you can see how you respond to emotions. You can also grab yourself a free copy of the book that he mentions in this episode, which is Behind the Masks. You can do that at the centerofemotionaleducation.com/book. Both of these links are in the show notes. So when you head over to Apple Podcasts to give us that 5-star review, you can see those links there. Finally, just big thanks to our two sponsors of this podcast. So we have Candaprint. This is my personal, or LPT's personal chosen printer, has been for the last 6 years. They are based in Corby, Northamptonshire, and they are a one-stop shop print and merchandise service provider, delivering a fully comprehensive bespoke design and print service to a wide variety of clients and industries. And they really have been our go-to print service for all our signage, our cookbooks, our welcome packs, our Mastering You journals. So if you run a business and you want to showcase it with awesome branding, then go to candaprint.co.uk. Our second sponsor is Comfrey & Clove, run by one of our own LPT members, Sarah D. Sewell of Comfrey & Clove. And she offers Swedish massage, deep tissue, deep tissue, definitely my favorite. Hot stone massage, definitely my favorite. You can find out all the different services that Sarah has to offer over at bit.ly/Comfrey Clove. Again, all of these links are in the show notes, so head on over if you want to find out more. Currently, Sarah at Comfrey Clove has a fantastic discount for listeners of this show as well, up to 25%. So to find out more, definitely check her out. Okay, without further ado, let's get into mastering your emotions today with Matthew Gibson.
Welcome to Mastering You. How are we doing today?
Good, thank you. How are you?
I've got a bit of a cold, so apologies in advance if I sound a bit bummed up. But hey, I'm still going to make this happen. And we've got a great topic today. So anyone listening to Mastering You for any amount of time will know just how important, you know, personal development is and how important managing our emotions is. And this is an expertise of yourself. What actually is mastering our emotions? Well, what does that mean?
Yeah. That's the big question to start with. That's a long conversation. So it's, I think there's a simple answer and a complex answer in that I think most people think about mastering their emotions, that they have some element of control over their emotions and have, and then are able to use their emotions to do certain things like motivate them to achieve particular goals and make sure that, I don't know, feeling distressed or stressed or overwhelmed or whatever doesn't get in the way of achieving those. And in many ways, that is what it is. But in lots of ways, we don't have that level of control. And it's more about, well, what do we do with the emotions that we don't like, that we don't want, that we find difficult, that we find challenging? And when they come up, and they're unwelcome, because they usually come up at times that we don't expect or want, it's what do we do in those moments? And I guess it, mastery in some ways isn't so much about having control as much as it is about letting you feel those things and letting them come up and not having them be the driver of your decision making. Because often what happens is that we have a feeling and then we think we have to do something about it. So, you know, you feel sad, I have to make myself feel less sad, or I feel worried about how people are gonna judge me for doing this thing, so we perhaps hide, or we don't push ourselves, or we don't want to put ourselves in the limelight or whatever. And these are all unconscious processes. And so I guess in some ways, mastery is about, well, what do you do with those feelings? And how do you influence it, both the feeling itself as well as the outcome? And that's why I mean it's a complex thing, because we're not looking to control our feelings as much as it is be able to represent who we are, feel what we feel, and understand what it means to feel those things. So our feelings are in many ways echoes of our past. They come up, like we might feel sad or distressed or upset for whatever reason. And often they are linked to what's happened to us in our lives. And by understanding ourselves and exploring who we are going to understand our feelings much better. So then we'll be able to engage with the present rather than be responding to the past. Because an awful lot of our feelings, you know, particularly the difficult ones, are, you know, part of the fight, flight, freeze response. You know, the fear, we talk about fear, but an awful lot of fear is shame-based, you know, in the sense that I am thinking about who I am and how I am being perceived and how I perceive myself. And this is shame-based fear, is that I fear it. I fear the judgment. I fear the criticism. I fear not being able to do what I want to be doing. And so we talk about it as being fear, but actually the response is very different. The shame is at the core of a lot of that, or the self-consciousness. And that's what takes us away from the present. It takes us away from having a honest conversation with your partner, with yourself. It leads you often to try and cover up those feelings in some way. So we don't want to be honest. We don't necessarily want to be honest with ourselves with it, because they are difficult experiences. We might want to do whatever we can just to manage those difficult feelings. And that is what moves us away from our ultimate goals, you know. And for me, I think it's about representing who we are in each moment. It's about being able to feel the full range of emotions and not being worried about them. And that is what being alive is about.
There's that book, isn't there, that mindset book by Carol Dweck, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. I don't know if that kind of, like, I guess what you're saying is it's okay to feel the fear, but feel fears, I mean, that's just a natural response to you know, any sort of threat that we may perceive, right?
Mm. Yeah.
Are you kind of saying that sometimes we're too quick to try and fix things?
Absolutely, yeah. We have the unconscious process of moving away from the difficult feelings. So I might either hide or withdraw, you know, and people do all kinds of things which are self-sabotaging behaviors to try and hide those difficult feelings. You know, I might not do the thing that I want to do. I might drink a bit more. I might disappear or hide. I might not go and see these particular people. I might get angry and aggressive or blame or shame other people, because by doing that, we're focusing on this other thing rather than what's actually going on for us. And we can feel quite righteous in that sometimes. But actually, a lot of what is driving those behaviors is a desire to move away from or distance ourselves from these difficult feelings. And I think until we accept that it's okay to feel them, and then we need to share them with other people, we're not going to be able to experience these particular feelings, but all feelings. You know, because if you dampen down some, you dampen down all. You dampen down fear and shame, you will dampen down joy and compassion. You know, it doesn't work as a, you know, I'll do a little bit here and a little bit there.
If we like loop all the way back to that first question, then would you say it's less about trying to control the fears, more about manage them?
It's about not being scared. And I think that's what it's, not being worried about what you're feeling, not being worried about what that feeling represents, not being worried about what's behind those feelings, and facing our fears, facing the struggles, accepting our story and who we are. That is how you master your emotions.
Nice. What, obviously, like whenever I talk to someone who has expertise in an area, you know, one of the benefits for people like myself and you is, obviously, we live and breathe this stuff and we get to implement it in our own life. What changes have you made or improvements to how you deal with your own emotions, you know, that you've found that you're doing better? What, just to give people like practical examples of things that you've actually, you know, found either yourself or that you've implemented with others?
Sure, yeah. What do I do differently? I graduated in, you know, 30 years ago, 20, 30 years ago, I can't remember now. And I hadn't done any work on myself, and I wasn't really particularly aware about the importance of feelings or what I necessarily felt. And I think I experienced an awful lot of what a lot of people experience, which is just, I didn't know what to do with my life. I had absolutely no clue. And so I was applying for this job and that job, and they weren't related or they weren't linked. I had no real clear idea about what it is that I wanted to go for. And that was because I didn't know who I really was. I didn't know what I was feeling. If you don't, and because I didn't know what I was feeling, I didn't really know what were the things that were motivating me, what were the things that were part of who I was that would represent who I wanted to be, or what would be my contribution to society, to life. And so, and because of that, people pick that up. People know that you're not committed to doing this thing if you're half-heartedly doing it, because you just don't know. And so, you know, ended up doing terrible jobs and just bumming around a bit and not really having jobs. And that was, it wasn't, that was sort of how I ended up sort of finding out about the importance of emotions. I then visited a center just because I thought I had nothing else to do, but I started having conversations about these things. And what started to change was just starting to notice how I felt, starting to notice, give words to how I was feeling, try and communicate more about it. And the difference was, then I was able to see what was linked to what I thought was really important. And so for me, that meant that I, over a short, fairly short period of time, could see that I really wanted to work with people, and I really was committed to working with children. That was a big thing for me. And so I trained to be a social worker, and that's what I did. And that's how then I started then becoming interested in emotions. I was implementing that an awful lot with people that I work with. I then did a PhD in emotions and ended up being a researcher in emotions. And, you know, equally, that problem that I was having with not really knowing who I was or what I was feeling was just seen right across my life. I mean, I was also same problem in relationships, in that I was half-heartedly having a relationship. You know, I feel sorry for the people I was in a relationship with at the time.
Is a lot of that not just growing up, though? Like, you know, is that not, or do you think how could things have been better?
Well, is it part of growing up? Because there's an awful lot of people who are older who have the same problem, same issues. You have people who are younger who have been forced to deal with issues. I mean, I've worked an awful lot with children who have suffered an awful lot of trauma in their lives. And some of them who have done that work and have been provided with therapy and certain levels of support are people who seem a lot older than their years.
Yeah.
You know, and so the issue of maturity, wisdom, whatever we want to call it, isn't necessarily linked to chronological age.
No.
It's very much about about the work that you have done. And for me, the difference is those people who have faced their stories, accepted those stories, and then can accept what they feel and understand what they feel. Because that's the difference in the moment, is that if you are going to get into something in which you feel scared or you feel ashamed or whatever, and you just disappear, you fight, flight, freeze, whatever it might be, you're not in the moment, you're not present, you're not having a relationship with the person in the here and now, and you're not bringing yourself in the moment. You are withdrawing, retreating, and facing, operating from a position of the past. So I don't know, for me, that's why I think it's really important for people to do that work, the personal development work, to be committed to their individual growth. Because I think by committing to that, people will know that there is something on the other side, and people can do things better and feel different. For me, life felt different. It felt less flat. It felt less dull.
Was there a particular moment that you remember where things sort of switched, or was it very gradual over time?
Some things switched. There were some things which I felt just happened immediately, and some things were much longer. Because for me, like, I grew up in a family in which there was a rule of basically don't necessarily talk about the truth. And yeah. I sort of carried that family rule with me. And I hadn't really grasped the full extent of, like, my mother died when I was 7 weeks old, and that never really been talked about in the family. And I didn't realize the full sort of impact that was sort of, I was carrying that. Yeah. And then I said, go on this course, and the course was just basically, you know, what would you say to her if you could? And it was just this realization in that moment that I'd been carrying this fear of facing that, as well as being really unable to even have contemplated what that might have been or what that implication might have been for me. And that just felt freeing, because all of a sudden I was given the permission to actually break the family rule and say something which I never felt able to say or even considered because I was carrying it. So there was something which all of a sudden made me feel much more open to be able to have conversations with people. And I wasn't scared to go to places that perhaps I would have before. And so my conversations and my relationships with people started to feel more meaningful and feel deeper because I just felt freer to have those conversations. That didn't necessarily change my behavior overnight in terms of, you know, all the habits and other things that you've amassed over the years, but it allowed me to start observing them and seeing them differently so that I could then actually go, all right, that's not necessarily what I want to be doing, and I can see that and I'm not worried about why that might be, and now I can start doing something about it. And so just taking that position of observing, being aware, and then trying to see what I can do, and that was what took a lot longer. So there was a definite immediate reaction, and then there was the longer term sort of change of behavior, I think. I mean, some people do, we've run courses, emotional education courses, for a very long time, years. And Jean, who I work with, she's been doing it since the early 80s. And there are an awful lot of people who come out of those courses who say that it is those courses that made an immediate impact on whatever it is, you know, their choice of their career or their ability to excel in the jobs that they're doing or whatever it might be, because it just opens them up and does exactly how I felt.
Makes them feel freer. I think that, you made me think there. Like, I think that's one of the reasons why people in general, but definitely myself, are so interested in sort of personal development, because you can have, you know, let's face it, there's lots of books and sort of personal development out there that's, you know, a lot of sort of fluff. It's kind of like the same thing all the time. But then you've got the other side of it where you can go to a course, it can literally have a light bulb go off in your head, and you can make massive breakthroughs just, you know, in a day.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, books are great. They give you ideas, but you've got to apply it to yourself. And We've got an inbuilt sort of mechanism which says, don't apply this too much because, you know, you never know, you might open the can of worms or or whatever. And so I think courses or individual work, whether that's therapy, coaching or whatever, is so much more impactful because you can directly apply it to somebody's life and you can directly see it. And then you get the response because you need somebody to sort of help you understand how you're feeling and know that that's okay. Particularly if it's a feeling you've never had before or you've been scared to have before, because it's actually like, it's hard, you know? And so having someone create a exercise or scaffold, a support system around a particular way of thinking, feeling, allows you to go much deeper than just reading a book. To say that reading a book's not good, because it is, and books have changed all kinds of things, but it's not personally tailored to your particular situation.
Even just knowing certain things is useful. Like you said, like, you know, lots of people just aren't even aware, just, you know, of how much your emotions are driven by your unconscious mind. You know, like you said, the past experiences, things that you've not really dealt with. You know, many people just think that that is their identity and that's the way that they are and that's the way that they were born. And, you know, the emotions that they're exhibiting is just who they are. And so just if, you know, just to know, just even to listen to this podcast and be like, oh, maybe I'm holding anxiety, or maybe, you know, I can identify with Matthew's story and, you know, maybe that's why I have exhibit some of these emotions.
Yeah. Well, yeah, absolutely. I think, I mean, Jean, I talk about Jean because she sort of set up the Center for Emotional Education, and her book is called behind the masks. And what she means by that is that we, our experiences over time create a set of masks, which are the acceptable face to other people, which hide those things that we are uncomfortable with. But what we're uncomfortable with are the messages that we've been given over time. So, you know, you tell a child that something is good or something is bad, they will start to have a clear idea about what is acceptable and what isn't acceptable. We then develop a mask to provide that acceptable face. And then what happens is that we become the mask. And yeah. Then once you've become the mask, you are unaware that actually deep down there's another part of you, which is the real honest and that part of you that wants to express yourself in the way that you want to express yourself and do the thing that you really want to do and has a particular unique gift that nobody else perhaps has. But actually we've been channeled down to present ourselves in a particular way with a whole bunch of shoulds. You should do this and you should do that and you shouldn't do X, Y, and Z, which shuts down our experience of life. And once you do that, life just becomes, and that's what I was saying before, for me, life would become, it was duller.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't able to express the full range because I wasn't allowing myself. And so, you know, decisions were more difficult, relationships weren't as satisfying, and I was just a bit aimless. And I think once we see that there is that part of us that wants to express who we really are, that we can see that there is a mask and there's a difference between the mask, the acceptable part that we need to present, and this other part of us that actually sometimes feels like it needs to be protected. It can feel exposing, feel vulnerable, you know, and we've all been through the school system. You know, it's not all to blame on the family. I mean, everyone gone through the school system will know what it's like, you know. Yeah. We carry with us permanently the situation in which you're the person who gets picked on. Some of us are the person who was picked on, you know, but everybody has a way of sort of trying to navigate that difficult part of our lives. And, you know, it exacerbates, you know, the stuff that perhaps was going on in our family or other parts of our lives. But if we carry on our lives through living like we are the mask, then it will be very unfulfilling.
For anyone listening that, you know, knows that they kind of struggle to keep their emotions in check, what's some sort of top, I don't know, strategies or you know, starting points for these people that, you know, want to kind of do what you're talking about? Because obviously everything that we said sounds great. You know, people may understand or may not, but, you know, some practical things that they can do to kind of, because a lot of what you're talking about is kind of really building self-awareness, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, we talk about self-awareness is the first step, but it's also the booby prize in that if you just have self-awareness, nothing changes. You then have to have the things that you do as a result of having that awareness, which is the thing that makes the difference in your life and your relationships. But to build awareness about how we feel, and the research is very clear that those people who are able to identify and label their emotions are those who describe life as being much more satisfying and fulfilling. And it's a long process of being able to understand that. So just taking the time to work out how you feel and start from the very basics of your body. If you feel anxious, you feel worried, you feel stressed, whatever it is, where is that in the body? Is that held in tension in your shoulders or in your stomach or your legs? Do you shake? Does your voice go? Whatever it might be. And just being aware of that and not putting any judgment on what that might be. And through being able to do that routinely, you can then start to do something about it, because you can then just say, right, okay, I'll try and relax that, try and relax this, try and do whatever. And that awareness brings you the possibility of making that change. And when you then start talking about how you feel to people, most people are very receptive to that, because it's something that can't be challenged. You know, if you say, what most of the time happens when people feel is that they go, I think that, whatever, or I feel that. But what you say, as soon as you put that on the end of I feel, you're not saying about how you feel, you're saying about what you think. I feel that you are being whatever. Yeah. Whereas if you say I feel something, that can't be refuted because that's your experience. And the more you try that, the better you get at it. And the more words you are able to describe your feelings, the research says that the more satisfying you have with your relationships or with whether that's work or romantic or whatever. So developing that observer position, being able to see and feel what you feel.
And is that best to do, sorry to interrupt, is that best to do sort of internally in your own head, or is it a good idea to get it down on paper, or what are your recommendations about how this is done? Is it enough just to think that thought?
I think so. Other people don't. I don't know necessarily the right answer to that. If you're a person that likes to write it down. I do think if you write it down, you're spending more time doing it. And some of the problem with thinking is that you think for a very short period of time before your mind flits on to something else. And so writing down can be a really, really powerful way of giving some thought to what you feel and where that might be and how that manifests itself.
Yeah.
And I mean, I guess the other point I think is key in terms of mastering. I mean, it comes back to the question that you asked, what is mastering your emotions? Is that the point of doing all of this is so that you don't let your emotions get in the way. You know, it does bring all these benefits, I think, of making you feel more alive and being able to experience more joy and deeper relationships and all of those things. But ultimately, if we make decisions on the basis of how we feel, we'll be making decisions that are contradictory every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, I'll do this, I'll do that, I'll do the other. And then it's, you know, and lots of people do live their lives by deciding to do with how they feel. But actually, if we make decisions on the basis of what is right for who we are, which is why it's really important to do that work, then when we feel bad about it, it doesn't matter. So like, if you decide to climb a mountain and you're committed to getting to the top of that mountain, at some point halfway up, I mean, I climbed Mount Kinabalu in Borneo, and it was hard work. And, you know, you get to the point where it's so high up that the altitude is affecting your breathing and people are sort of sitting down and going back down. But if you're committed to getting to the top, it doesn't matter that you feel tired and you feel like you're not going to make it.
Yeah.
All of these emotions that you're having, which are basically telling you to turn back around and give up, you get there because you don't let those get in the way. And that is the point, is that having this awareness allows you to see that this can't get in the way or shouldn't get in the way of the decision that you've made that you think is the right decision for you. And so it comes back to, who are you? What are the core values, principles, and ideals that you want to live your life by? And making decisions on the basis of those, no matter what it is that you feel in the moment. And that, for me, is what mastering emotions is about. Letting yourself feel the things that you feel and really knowing who you are so that your life is going in the direction that you really need it to go in. So one exercise to do for that is to wake up every morning and before you do anything, just write down an answer to the question, what does my heart want? And then just write it down and do that for a few months. And once you then review everything that you've written down, you'll have some really, there'll be a pattern. It will say that your life, you should be doing this or that or whatever it might be. And that will be really helpful in terms of making certain decisions, rather than waking up in the morning and going, oh, I don't feel like it's really hard, and then maybe not doing it, or hiding from it, or not doing it as well as you could do, whatever it might be.
Yeah. I think just to add to that, just reviewing what you believe at the end of the day that went well, what was your win? Because that leaves clues, doesn't it? If you, one thing I've done with my children, I've mentioned this once before on the podcast, is at bedtime, you know, always ask, what was your favorite thing? You know, if you didn't, we never missed a day for like ever since, you know, she could talk. It was just one of those things. And it's just interesting because over the years, those things don't change that much. You know, it's generally around sort of family and, you know, playing that game or doing something with you. And, you know, so it kind of, and then I'll have to answer the same question back. And you realize that actually, you know, you've done so many things through your day, but actually most of them wasn't your favorite thing. You know, it was the time that you maybe spent with your family or your loved ones. And then that, like I said, leaves clues with what your values are.
Absolutely, yeah. And yet often we find ourselves being pulled in directions which are going against our values. And then we do them because we worry about what the consequence might be, or, you know, how we might be perceived, or judged, or criticized, or whatever, when actually, when we align decisions and lives to those particular values, life looks very different.
Yeah, that's actually one of our, we're just about to launch our weight loss mindset course. And one of our sort of practical strategies is actually doing a daily audit and auditing your daily actions and looking at how much they are aligning with what you're saying is your true values, what's important to you. It's so easy, isn't it, to sit down and do the 10, 15 minutes, this is what I value, this is important to me, and then go off into your own world, and then it's everything else but what you've just written down. A bit like when people set goals for the new year to get fit, lose weight, and earn £1 million, and then they do none of their actions actually are any similar to the things that their goals are.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And we're all masters of it, aren't we?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I think, is that we it's so easy to identify the problems in other people, or a mask in other people, or insincerity in other people. And yet when it comes to us, it's really hard, because there's so much surrounding it in terms of, well, if I do identify these things, then what does that say about me, and how do I feel about myself with it? And so that comes back to that inherent self-protection. And so we tell ourselves that we are doing the right things, but my life isn't going in the right direction or doing the right thing, but I am doing all the things that I should be doing. So I'm not quite sure what's going wrong there. And that's part of the thing of coming back to what we were saying, is perhaps what I was saying, just not being scared of how we feel, not being worried about, you know, yes, it's uncomfortable, it's not great, but once we're all right with that, and it's all right for it to be uncomfortable, and it's all right to sometimes do something that is the opposite of what we really should be doing, that's then where we've got the ability to do something about it.
But you hear these quotes in personal development, don't you? Things like, it's okay not to be okay, and things like that. And I think that they're good, but I think, you know, sometimes they need unpacking a little bit more for people to truly grasp, what does that really mean? You know, and I think what you're saying is basically, it is okay to be okay, but what you're sort of explaining, it's just a human emotion. And if you wasn't having these feelings, then your brain wouldn't be operating, you know, correctly how it should be. It's just that, you know, how we interpret some of these emotions, we could probably be better at.
Yeah. We are all human beings, you know. It's like, we are told in many ways, don't be a human being, don't have these feelings, don't make these mistakes, don't be a hypocrite, you know, and sometimes we are. Sometimes we do make mistakes. Sometimes we do have those feelings that we don't like. Sometimes we really don't like people, or whatever it might be. And for some, we're not allowed to have those feelings, or you know, it's for
things
me.
Things are changing though, right? Do you not think like you mentioned your own sort of upbringing and how you wasn't really meant to talk about the truth and certain things just didn't get talked about. I think that's probably fit, like, you know, for most people, I don't know, 40, 50 plus listening, maybe even younger, they think back to their parents, definitely their grandparents, think that was kind of, you know, you don't rock the boat. Like that was kind of more the norm. Whereas it does seem today people are more open. Thing you can talk about things a lot more openly than once before. And do you think as a society we're getting, because it's contradictory, isn't it? Because everything you hear in mainstream media is depression's on the up and suicide's on the up and anxiety and all of these different sort of mental health issues that we're hearing about. But at the same time, we seem to be better at talking about the issues. So what gives?
I think it's a veneer. It's like we know that it's important to talk. And so we sort of say, all right, well, it's important to talk. But as soon as you then start talking about the more difficult subjects, people aren't interested, not in the same way, or certainly not when you're applying it to them. And so there's obviously generational issues, but the family roles that people give, you know, some families you'll have children or rules within families which certain feelings are accepted and certain feelings aren't. In society more generally, we have the same thing. You only have to look in a newspaper, on social media, on the news, telly, whatever it might be, to give you a very clear idea about what you should or should not look like, or what you should or should not talk about.
That's a good point. Yeah.
And some of that is like, okay, it's okay to talk about your mental health. It's okay to talk about feeling down and depressed and all the rest of it. That's fine. But actually, only to a point. People don't really want to engage with it on a meaningful level. It's like we want to label it as something different that's not us. Like, you know, you're experiencing this and therefore we can give it this label, perhaps we can give it a diagnosis, perhaps there's a treatment for it, rather than engaging with it from the point of this is a human experience and this is part of just being normal and anybody in this circumstance might actually be experiencing this. But let's really get down to why people feel depressed or whatever it might be. It's that they can't express themselves their full extent of who they are. And that might be because they're the rules inside or society, whatever it might be. So I just don't think that we want to have those deeper conversations. And for me, the test is simply you get people in a room and you say, well, let's talk about your shame.
Yeah.
What do you feel ashamed of? And there will be silence in the room because it's not okay to talk about the things that people struggle with. And that's what people struggle with.
So that thing you just talked about with the labels, I think, so I haven't really ever thought about that because you talked about labels earlier. It kind of got me thinking. But what you're saying is we've got really good at labeling in the sense of, you know, wanted to kind of dismiss the issue and just say, well, you've got this, you've got that, or whether it's ADHD or whether it's, you know, whatever. Autism, but yeah, we're not patient enough to actually label the human part of it, are we?
I don't know. For me, I'm not saying I'm necessarily the expert on it, but for me, it's about what brings us closer together as human beings and what pulls us further apart. And the label in the whole entire system of labeling diagnosis can sometimes be a way of distancing people and their experience. Like it's over there, it's not us. And yet it very much would be us if we'd have lived their shoes. And if we look at the way that we sort of address it, so in schools, right? So we all come through the school system, you get a child who is labeled ADHD or oppositional defiant disorder or whatever it might be, they are the same kids who go through the school discipline program, whatever that discipline program might be, which is most of the time some form of timeout, suspensions, exclusions, because their behavior doesn't fit what they should be doing.
Society's norm, yeah.
Yeah. And absolutely, you look at it and you go, this person or this child is disruptive or whatever it might be. But what this behavior is telling us is that this person, this child is struggling in some ways, and the exclusions and the timeouts or whatever it might be is simply not working, because it doesn't improve those children's behavior. It might take them away from the other children.
Yeah.
If we actually say, how do we help this person? It is not through those timeouts and exclusions and suspensions. It is much more about engaging with them and their experience and understanding what is good about them, not good about them, what skills, what they can do, what they're really struggling with in these particular classes. And those are often emotional skills. You know, how do you deal with that frustration? How do you deal with whatever it was that resulted in that particular behavior? Or, you know, maybe we need to change the way that particular child engages with education rather than this very rigid educational system, which, you know, everybody, a certain number of children in a room, provided with information in certain ways, tested in certain ways, which might suit lots of children, but there's some children that it just doesn't suit.
Yeah, it's set up for certain individuals, isn't it?
Yeah, so we have those who are on the in and those who are on the out.
Yeah.
And what's that saying about human experience? If it doesn't fit this in this box, it's something odd, it's different. And that's happens with emotions all the time. You know, we have this fetishization in our society that, you know, happiness and positivity. And if you're not, you know, striving for happiness and positivity, then there's something wrong.
Yeah.
And it's sort of saying, well, it's not okay to feel down. It's not okay. Even though everybody says I feel stressed and overwhelmed, it's almost like I feel stressed and overwhelmed because I shouldn't be feeling stressed and overwhelmed.
So this is might be controversial saying this, but some of what you're talking about, is this, could this have an effect on what I just sort of talked about a bit earlier about the rising rates of things like, you know, depression, stress, anxiety? Is it that we're just being too quick to be labelled with a problem, you know, in air quotes, rather than having some time for the labels to be a little bit more at the root of the issue around how we're feeling?
Yeah, well, we're labeling the person rather than the system. So we sort of say this person has whatever it is, rather than saying the system in which they live is the problem. You know, kids who go into schools and have certain difficulties, is it that kid has the problem, or is it perhaps the rigid nature of the environment in which they're supposed to engage? And not all schools are like that, so I'm not trying to dump on schools.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And there's some great stuff going on, but for lots of kids, equally the same for some people. We have an economy which has a whole range of jobs which didn't exist before, with different pressures and a whole range of new surveillance and monitoring systems which are putting an awful lot of pressure on people, making them feel like they're being observed and watched, and, you know, their time is counted in all kinds of ways that weren't before, and then people are feeling stressed and overwhelmed and that they're not really doing what they want to do with their lives. Is that their problem, or is that more of a societal structural issue in which we're not providing for people in the way that we really should?
Well, either way, I suppose what you're suggesting would still help is being able to be observational or objective about the situation, you know, to the point where at least you can have some self-awareness to realize, well, maybe this isn't really fulfilling me. Maybe I need to make a change.
Hmm.
I mean, obviously it's never as easy as that. It's easy to say that, but, you know, if you're not, if, you know, obviously as the saying goes, if things aren't improving, if not changing, then maybe you need to change.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's the starting point, isn't it? You know, knowing how you feel in the situation is the starting point for being able to do something about it. And so it's not always possible to escape the system in which you are in, but it is always possible to do something different in the system that you are in. And it may not necessarily produce the results that you want, certainly not as quick as you want, but it is always possible to get a different result at some point. And particularly if you start being honest with yourself about how you feel and communicating with other people that you can trust with how you feel,
yeah,
you will slowly build a network around you of people who are trustworthy and supportive. And you can do an awful lot when you are connected with who you really are, being honest with about how you feel, with a supportive network who are there to really push you in the way that you need. And that's where change really happens.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this is, really enjoyed this, Matthew. So just tell the listeners a little bit about, you know, what you do and what your sort of mission is with the center and what the research revolves around.
Sure. Yeah. So we had a center for emotional education in Derbyshire for many years, run by Jean Bond and Tim Jennings, and they ran courses in emotional education, which were designed to try and help people understand themselves, bring them back to who they really were, get beyond their defenses, behind their masks, and really live from a place of worthiness so that they could do what they wanted with their lives and feel much more fulfilled. They had relationship courses, and quite a popular one was Healing Wounds of Childhood, which were specifically focused on, you know, some of the real challenges, difficulties and traumas that people have experienced growing up. We've recently turned this into an online course because Gene and Tim retired. So they are still very much part of the center. What we are building is very much a resource bank. Podcast is launching in March, and we have a bunch of articles which we regularly write and update, and that's written by either me and Joanne Barry, who's a therapist, Jade, who's a researcher, and then Jean and Tim, who are our therapists. So we have a bunch of articles, we'll have a podcast, we have all those resources, we have a bunch of other things on there that people can sign up for. You can download a free copy of Jean's book, Behind the Masks, Discovering Your True Self, from the website. And our aim is that for later this year, we'll be launching our online courses. So this would be really getting people to experience the sort of courses that we used to run face-to-face, but online, because we just want to make it a bit more accessible. We may do face-to-face courses in the future, but certainly at the moment it's online. So our first course will be Making the Most of Your Life, which is about having people understand who they really are and what their calling is. So how do they fulfill their potential and their true purpose? So that's our aim for those. There's some details on our website if people want to have a look.
Okay.
Which is centerforemotionaleducation.com, but that's center spelled the English way, C-E-N-T-R-E.
The right way.
Absolutely. There's an American one spelled the wrong way.
what we'll do is I will put all those links in the show notes for people as well, so they can find them. And yeah, that sounds like a great resource for people as well, to be able to download that free copy of the book. I'll definitely be doing that myself. I've really enjoyed this conversation, Matthew. Apologies again for my speech and my blocked up nose, but
I wouldn't have time.
I think we did all right, and yeah. I think we definitely delivered some value for the listeners. Do you have any last words of wisdom for people on the subject of emotions?
Oh, I don't know about that. just see the importance of it and say the thing that you don't want to say, but you know, deep down, you really should say. It will make a world of difference.
Nice. Fantastic. Okay, well, thanks so much for your time, Matthew.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, listeners, definitely check out Matthew's work. We'll put all the links in the show notes. So, yeah, go there, get that book downloaded, and we'll see you soon.
Brilliant.